sure. No, I just see the they want to sell it. Maybe somebody's got that around town. It's time to go. Again, opinions are those of the speakers, not necessarily shared by others at the station, part toto. And time for the labor hour with some GEO guests. So we'll get a campus update. I think they could be mentioning, I'll mention it now, the die-in on, I guess it's the noon hour over at the Alma Mater on tomorrow, Monday morning, actually, Monday day at midday. You can find out about that, about police violence, police killings. Thanks for listening.
Now the boat won't float. folks, and welcome to the Saturday, December 6th edition of the World Labor Hour here on WEFT 90.1 on your FM dial and streaming at weft.org. The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associates, station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. And now here's Bill to bring you some of our underwriters.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at Channing Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, visit www.centralillinoisjwj.org. That's centralilljwj.org.
Wonderful. Yeah. Centralilljwj.org.
Let me see. The World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. You do kind of a little clip there where it pops up with ZZ Top going, "We're bad.
We're nationwide. Nah. For AFL-CIO?
Yeah, it'd be too much problem. Yeah.
We need a better music for our underwriting announcements.
Yeah. Are you playing any right now?
No.
Oh, okay, because I don't have the headphones on. Oh, okay. So we don't need better music. We're still at the point where we need music.
Yeah, I said I said bad, but I didn't say it too clearly, so.
Okay. All righty. Programming and the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour and the Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice, both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. And we're lucky we got two guests here today from the GEO, so we're going to get to our in-studio guests in a little bit here, but we'll start off with some labor news stories, and I'll kick it off here. And this is about fast food worker strike fueled by other low-wage employees. And also mentions Eric Garner. Says thousands of low-wage employees in approximately 190 cities walked off the job Thursday, what organizers are calling the largest fast food worker strike to date, demanding $15 an hour pay and the right to unionize without retaliation. Fast food workers across the country hit the streets for the eighth time since the movement began 2 years ago with about a couple hundred employees in New York City. The campaign has since gone global, with one strike in May accompanied by solidarity rallies in 32 other countries. And during the last nationwide fast food worker strike, which was on September 4th, says here what makes the strike unique was that for the first time, employees from discount and convenience stores, as well as workers from 10 of the nation's busiest airports, joined forces with fast food employees in their call for higher wages and better working conditions. Also, home health care workers who first participated in September strike turned out in large numbers this time around, too, and some employees in Walmart stores, which recently saw its own series of strikes, also joined in. Says here from Kendall Fells, the organizing director of the Fast Food Forward group in New York, says it's not just about fast food workers. He says just about every low-wage service sector industry is getting involved, which is pretty much the heart of the American economy. It says also their efforts are starting to show some results. In Seattle and San Francisco, lawmakers have passed measures raising wages to $15 an hour, set to take effect over the next couple years. Says also the growing campaign has also gained support from powerful allies, including the SEIU and members of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. Also here it says, hands up, fast food. Workers in Kansas City, like others across the country, began their strike actions with a minute of silence and their hands held up over their heads. We're standing up for our wages because we deserve better, says Ebony Williams, a 22-year-old Jack-in-the-Box crew member in St. Louis. And we're standing up against racism and police brutality because the world needs a change. Williams, who's 7 months pregnant and makes $7.50 an hour with zero benefits as part of the Show Me $15 fast food worker organizing campaign, and she was one of nearly 200 St. Louis workers who walked off the job on Thursday. It says, reacting to the recent decisions not to indict police officers for killing unarmed African-American civilians in Ferguson, Missouri, and Staten Island, New York, workers across the country began their strike actions with a minute of silence and their hands held up over their heads. Fast food workers and supporters gathered late Tuesday evening to shut down the Phillips 66 convenience store in St. Louis. They chanted, hands up, don't shoot, and did a die-in in remembrance of Mike Brown and Eric Garner. The following morning, they rallied at Hardee's, McDonald's, and Chipotle. Later, they marched downtown and had a second hands-up moment of silence and did another die-in. Show Me $15 has been going on for 2 years, but Williams said the mood has shifted since the Michael Brown was shot. There's a sense the struggles are closely interconnected. Most fast food workers live in poor communities, just like Ferguson, she said. And if we had good jobs, if these corporations were paying their workers a livable wage, our community would be a lot stronger. So there was also a demonstration yesterday evening, I understand, at the McDonald's over at Kirby and Neal Street. So, and also a die-in at Centennial High School the other day that led to some unfortunate incidents happening outside the school then later on. But Aaron Ammons went into pretty good detail this morning about that and had a caller call in about that situation. So it's good to see the young kids taking some action in this town, having a die-in at Centennial High School. And then I guess there's some things scheduled for Central High School coming up this week, too. So interesting. Bill, did you say you had a new story?
Yeah, there's this is actually a PolitiFact article, and they're saying that this Ohio State representative's pants are pretty much on fire right now.
Liar, liar?
Yeah.
Pants on fire?
Yes. And this is by some guy named Tom Foran. Only hours after two state House Republicans unveiled legislation to make Ohio a, quote, right-to-work state, GOP leadership shot it down as a distraction lacking support. Quote, we have ambitious agenda focused on job creation and economic recovery, Senate President Keith Faber said in a statement, and right-to-work legislation is not on that list. But the legislation's co-sponsors, Representative Christina Rogner of Hudson and Representative Ron Magg of Lebanon, depicted their proposal as a matter of, quote, workplace freedom that would attract jobs. And contrary to a frequent argument of opponents, Magg inserted that workers in so-called right-to-work states make more money.
Really?
Yes.
I think that's been refuted for years and years, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, but what he's doing, at least he has something to cite. It's not just something that he pulled out of his hind end. You know, he's pointing to the Mackinac Center for Public Property, that widely conservative think tank in Michigan. And of course, they really support right-to-work laws. And they, he's quoting this something, the Michigan Worker Freedom website. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It says, quote, workers in right-to-work states make more when adjusting for cost of living. Workers in right-to-work states have 4.1% higher per capita personal incomes than workers in non-right-to-work states. They say that the source for that is someone named James M. Homan, an assistant director of fiscal policy at Mackinac Center, which, you know, means he's probably just pulling things out of his hind end,
mm-hmm.
putting them on a website. He writes that he calculated the adjusted per capita personal income using a state-by-state cost of living index and converted personal income figures for all 50 states to the value of Michigan dollars. Now, wow, are Michigan dollars worth more than Illinois dollars?
They must be, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But anyway, right-to-work states have a 4.1% higher. Yeah, that's what he says. But that is refuted by the Economic Policy Institute, which they quote as generally pro-union, and that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Economic Policy Institute conducted an analysis of right-to-work laws using a regression model that controlled for more than 40 factors in addition to the cost of living in different states. Wow, that sounds a lot fancier than the guy in Michigan. But
in Mackinac, yeah.
Anyway, they found out that right-to-work states are 3.2% lower than non-right to work states.
Mm-hmm.
And for everyone, not just union members, they also concluded that the average full-time, full-year worker in a right to work state makes about $1,500 less per year than a similar worker elsewhere. Well, okay, so that's the pro-labor institute. You don't want to, you know, they've got an axe to grind here. However, the Wall Street Journal reported last December, in states with a right-to-work law, quote, wages tend to be lower, but job growth stronger than states that don't have the law. But gauging how much of this divergence in paychecks and unemployment is a result of laws is difficult to do. And the journal said that right-to-work states, that employees in right-to-work states earned 9.8% less than workers in states without such laws. Yeah, you know, the Wall Street Journal, they definitely don't have any axes to grind there, do they? Then they're quoting like nine.
They're pretty conservative. Aren't they owned by Rupert Murdoch these days?
That's correct. Yeah. And but they're saying that employees of right-to-work states earned 9.8% less. That is,
right.
I mean, much more that's than the economic pro-union Economic Policy Institute.
Right, right. 10% difference pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. So,
and like you say, it's across the board. It affects all workers, not just union workers. And
that's true.
Yeah.
Going on, the Congressional Research Service issued a study last December examining right-to-work laws. Using data from the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics, it found that wages in what it called union security states, that's where you would have a clause in your contract that means that the union, everybody has to belong to the union and the management only deals with the union. That's basically what a security clause is. Were 16.6% higher than in right-to-work states.
Wow, 16.6.
Yeah, wow. So that Mackinac Center and this representative of Ohio, Mr. Maag, or that's M-A-A-G, so I'm just guessing on how to pronounce it, are definitely wrong.
Yeah.
Blazing, like flaming.
Pants on fire.
Infernal. Towering infernos of pants.
There you go.
There.
I got a quick story kind of related back to the thing about the minimum wage. And it says here that Chicago has voted to raise the minimum wage to $13 an hour by 2019. It says the Chicago City Council has approved a bill to raise the city's minimum wage to $13 an hour by 2019. The proposal put forward by Mayor Rahm Emanuel will give Chicago, it says here, the second highest minimum wage in the nation behind Seattle's $15, set to take effect by 2018. It was approved by a 44-5 vote, and it phases in the increase over the next 5 years from the current minimum wage of $8.25 to $10 by July of 2015. So we'll see if that takes effect. July 2015 isn't that far away. $10 per hour in Chicago, then $11 per hour by 2017, and $13 an hour by 2019. It says the bill comes at a time when minimum wage laws have taken center stage in the ongoing national debate about stagnating wages. American wages have been growing far slower than both productivity and inflation, with low-wage workers earning the lowest effective wages in 50 years. So,
here's something, Bob. I was on a job one time. This is several years ago, and what we were doing, it was landscaping, all right? Mm-hmm. And there was this contractor there, and they did landscaping. It was for a sort of a small local or area, I'll say, franchise of used car dealerships
mm-hmm.
here in Central Illinois. And anyway, they were they're doing their work, and the asphalt company showed up. And, of course, the asphalt company is union. It's Champagne Asphalt at the time, and one of the people on their crew called the hall. The hall came out and got them signed up, you know, so I got this job. Well, anyway, we were doing was placing riprap, and that's those great big white rocks you see where there might be erosion. Mm-hmm. And we're doing all that and several other different things. And their foreman, he goes, he said, wow, you know, we had these guys from this temp agency and they were just out here screwing around and, yeah, and like, and all that. And he goes, you guys, you know what you're doing and you work hard. And so I quoted our wage at the time, mm-hmm, you know, which would have been like three or four times higher than the people that was working for him before.
We're screwing around, yeah.
Yeah, and the benefits. And I said, yeah, man, you get what you pay for.
Right, yeah. You know. You do, certainly.
I mean, they actually probably got a lot more work done with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Than it would have otherwise, and probably didn't hurt them at all.
Happier workers are more productive workers, that's for sure. So.
Well, you really want to keep that job.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, definitely. Yep. How about if we go to a musical break here? I got a tune queued up here.
Come back with our two mystery guests from the GEO.
Yeah, yeah. This is from Billy Jones. This is a tune called Revolution Blues here. So
Billy Jones, don't know him.
Yeah, yeah, he's a blues man from down south Mississippi area. So this is a kind of interesting tune here, Revolution Blues.
All right.
Sky. They make big money deals in the back room while they're sending off our children to die. We've been kicked around so long, we gotta pull ourselves up off of the floor. Gotta stand up, start this revolution. We've been beat down, we've been misused, we've been stepped on. We ain't gonna take it no more. Moving the White House, they promise us the pie in the sky. They make big money deals in the back room while they're sending off our children to die. We've been kicked around so long, we gotta pull ourselves up off of the floor. Gotta stand up, start this revolution. We've been beat down, we've been misused, we've been stepped on. We ain't gonna take it no more. We'll be right back.
right, we're back here on the World Labor Hour on WEFT Champaign, and we got two guests here from the GEO. I'll let them introduce themselves here. So,
my name is Otatia. I'm the Solidarity Officer of the GEO and Chair of the Solidarity Committee.
Excellent.
And my name is Samira. I'm a Staff Organizer with the GEO.
Excellent. We'd love to have the GEO folks here all the time. You guys always have some interesting things going on and whatnot. So, Odatia, why don't you start off and tell us a little bit about what the GEO is up to these days?
So, one of the big things that we've been working on for a long time that we're trying to shape is the Solidarity Committee itself.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, in fact, this last week, we ratified at the general membership meeting of the GEO the bylaws which will basically govern how the Solidarity Committee will work in the future. But more importantly, we also took to membership something we called the Declaration of Solidarity, which is a kind of mission statement which is trying to put together a range of issues which have shaped some of the work we've done in the past and some of the work we want to do in the future. And two things that stand out of that declaration broadly, one is an increasing emphasis on the GEO's understanding of local, mm-hmm. but local issues in connection with either regional ones or state ones or national ones. So we've been acting on some of them also recently, like the Carol Ammons campaign in a kind of statewide level,
mm-hmm.
The more regional things like the Mahomet Aquifer.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And even more national issues like standing in solidarity with striking graduate employees at the University of Oregon.
Ah.
So we've kind of started acting on some of the things that we've put in place.
Right.
And the other thing we've tried to do is put together a framework in which we can work both on kind of researching and studying social movements around us, and at the same time being able to take positions on them and put out statements and act on them.
Mm-hmm.
So we've created smaller research groups
mm-hmm.
inside the committee itself. The most active one, which Samira will talk about, I think, in a bit, is the one on police brutality and racial injustice.
Excellent, yeah.
And we have three others, which are on gender justice, environmental justice, and what we're planning, which is a workers' center. So it's a workers' center research group.
Yeah. You guys were active in the past. You took some stands on the jail issue locally, correct?
Yes, that's correct. The Solidarity Committee has its history outside the GEO before it gets incorporated by the general membership into the union itself.
Mm-hmm.
It began out of the anti-prison campaign in this town,
mm-hmm.
And the campaign for more schools and the campaign mm-hmm. for rights for citizens with convictions and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then it gets incorporated into the union 2 years ago. So this is the second, my tenure is the second tenure as chair of the Solidarity Committee.
Excellent. Yeah. Were you guys out yesterday at the demonstration at McDonald's too about the...
Yes, we were. I think over 30 people were out there and the media came out and it was cold and rainy, but there was a lot of great energy and chants and people honking their horns. And so it was good to show that Champaign is in solidarity with the nation.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, this is quite a growing nationwide effort here to work with the people there, get them some decent wages and stuff like that. So
definitely,
it's good to see. Yeah, yeah.
In fact, some of this has happened in the past. I remember even before Carol Ammons began her election campaign, the first time I saw her was in the chilling winter outside the same McDonald's at Neil and Kirby
mm-hmm.
in a Fight for 15 rally last year. So we've been putting a lot of people together to kind of reach out and work with several other groups and learn from them and share space and resources. So that seems to be going really well. Some of the energy that Samira was talking about has been really high in the last few months, given that we found ourselves in the middle of very troubling times
mm-hmm.
With the firing of Stephen Salaita at the university.
Right.
Ferguson and the prevalent injustice around the Kiwan Carrington case here, the Centennial High School case this week.
James Kilgore at the U of I.
And James Kilgore, yes. Sure. So there's James Kilgore's case now has a substantial victory to it in the sense his appointment wasn't revoked, and the committee that oversaw the inquiries actually asked him to join. So that's been good. That's been a substantial victory, I think, for the campaign.
Yeah. And you say you were working in solidarity with the people up at the University of Oregon?
Yes. So GEO as a union, we're not only connected to local labor on our campus, but also trying to make connections with the Labor Council, connecting our workers. But nationally, we're connected to other graduate employees. And so the Graduate Teaching Fellows Federation, which is sort of the GEO equivalent at the University of Oregon, has been on strike for the past few days over what we see as pretty basic demands of paid sick leave and paid family leave. So these are basic demands that the workers deserve. They put in a lot of hard work, and unfortunately we see, you know, these universities spending a lot of money on lawyers and fighting these battles when they should just go ahead and give the workers paid sick leave and family leave that they deserve.
Right.
Wow. Their administrators' salaries are just out of sight.
Yes.
You know? Steadily increasing.
Yeah, and I suppose that they're, one of their coaches is the highest paid employee in the state employee there, too. That's always the way that is.
Yep. We see the same thing in private corporations. You know, we've been talking about Honeywell down there in Metropolis and the amount of money they spend to keep their workers locked out down there and bring in the scabs and put up housing complexes and stuff and house these people. Astronomical amounts of money when they could have just treated their own workers fairly and given them good health benefits and stuff like that. So there's a fairly strong graduate group up at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the TAA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were very crucial in the big uprisings and the sort of pushback against Scott Walker. Unfortunately, you know, they basically had right to work like legislation, and so the union is still strong and still fighting, but does have to, you know, collect dues individually and sort of restructure how their union has been functioning for the past few years. But they're still organizing and pushing back and fighting for fair wages.
Well, wow, you know, because I like Walter Reuther thought that the checkoff was a really cool thing, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, now we're getting the company to collect our dues.
We'll see how that works out here in Illinois, because we may have Scott Walker Light here with Rahner, you know.
So. Well, I tell you what, man, I remember one labor lobby day in 95 or 96. Wow. But it was... you know, usually you just get a few people from every local in the state. Well, this time, like 15,000 people showed up.
Hmm.
And it was just, it was incredible. It was like the whole South Lawn was just covered. There were all, and it was mainly building trades workers, too, because it's spring and a lot of us aren't working.
Yeah.
And the bars downtown were not prepared at all.
This was when, 95?
Yeah, 96? I believe it was 95, 96.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, how about if we take a quick music break here and we'll come back with our guests from the GEO. And this is from Homemade Jams Blues Band, a bunch of young kids out of Jackson, Mississippi, I believe. So here you go.
Y'all, we gotta buy it, you gotta meet.
Digging that slide guitar.
Yeah, Homemade Jams Blues Band. And that's a song titled Nothing Changes for the Pole.
That's so, kind of Zeppelin-esque.
Yeah, yeah. I think the oldest person in that band's like 18 years old now or whatnot. And they play these homemade guitars made out of car mufflers and stuff. You know, his dad, their dad's kind of designs the guitars and builds them themselves and stuff. So cool stuff, so. I got a quick public service announcement for you here. This is from the folks at Jobs with Justice. It says Charlie King, probably the most influential progressive folk singer in the U.S. today. You familiar with him, Bill?
I've heard of him. I'm not real familiar with his music. I haven't sat down and listened to him.
Yeah. So he's going to do a special performance at 3:30 p.m. on Thursday, December 11th in room 319 at Gregory Hall on the UIUC campus. He's put together Songs That Made History, a program of songs from labor, civil rights, and the history of other social movements in the U.S. Although this is a history department colloquium, kind of a nice change of pace from lectures, everyone is warmly invited. We hope to have people from the community, unions, etc. Charlie is quite amazing. If you've not seen him yet, please join us. This is once again Thursday, December 11th, room 319 in Gregory Hall on the UIUC campus. And we should always mention Labor's View TV on Sundays, cable channel 6, UPTV, at 4 o'clock with our normal host, Dave Johnson. And we usually mention Neil Parthen's Not Another Sports Show at 2 p.m. on WRFU, correct?
I believe so.
Yeah. All right, we're back.
I'll tell you what, I might step out and see if we got a Charlie King CD out there.
Yeah,
maybe
do that.
Play it towards the end of the show.
Yeah, see if we got that.
All right.
Folk or country. All right, wonderful. We're back with our two guests from the GEO, and we're going to talk to Odatia here. They just recently hired a new community organizer here for the GEO, Grant Antoline. And so Odatia is going to talk a little bit about that and how they're going to reach out into the community a little more. So,
yeah, so the hiring of Grant for the community organizer position was a very conscious move on the part of the GEO to basically try and have someone on the job all the time dedicated to organizing around the community and putting in resources, and whether it's keeping files, folders, papers, emailing, all kinds of things. So Grant's very busy with the Worker Center right now, and he was extremely influential in the way we organized resources for the Carol Ammons campaign.
Good.
It is yet another step in the ways in which we have tried to bring issues of solidarity to the entire membership and to the community at large. After the Solidarity Committee was written into the Constitution 2 years ago, we've tried to put in different creative ways of getting feedback from membership and trying to kind of collate those ideas and shape some solidarity commitments out of that. So Grant's position is very much in line with that. He's also currently busy working on the Mahomet Aquifer campaign and the landfill and environmental pollution resulting from that. Yeah. And we are looking to extend that campaign slowly and connect with more of East Central Illinois as we go along.
Yeah. We always mention here that the GEO is, we're amazed that it's a group that's always in flux, because you've always got new members coming in and new members leaving, you know, every year. What, probably one third or a quarter of your organization pretty much turns over every year. But yet you guys have remained very active, very strong, and interesting to see you continue to take your a role in the local community here. That's really a positive thing for you guys.
Well, it'd be nice if more unions would step up and take roles on, get rid of the gomperism, you know, pure and simple unionism,
mm-hmm.
you know, and unfortunately it will have to start with a huge educational effort on their membership.
Yeah.
You know, in many unions, especially in the building trades, at least among those older guys. I don't know, maybe the younger guys are a little bit more on the ball with some things, but I don't know. I don't see much political consciousness at all. I mean, I never hear anybody talk about politics on union construction jobs anymore.
Really?
And it didn't used to be that way.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, like if something comes up like the jail, what do you think the laborers wanted to do with the jail?
Build it.
They wanted to build that jail, yeah. man. They wanted to
There's a couple
that
more jobs. Yeah.
On the carpenters and everybody.
Just like the pipeline, man. Let's build it.
No, that's right. Keystone all the way. You know, my president of my union is lobbying for that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so just during the break, I think we felt one of the important reasons to bring up Otatia's points was that the union has resources, and your resources, a budget is moral at the end of the day.
Yes,
and so when we put resources into a community organizer, when the GEO actually goes through its structure and makes the Solidarity Committee, goes through that process that can be tedious to put it in the Constitution, right. When it has membership meetings where the members empower that committee to take statements, not just saying this is a Ferguson statement for the GEO Solidarity Committee,
right.
this is GEO's statement. These are concrete things that we have to do, and they help with that high turnover with the culture and the education. And so also we were mentioning earlier, you mentioned how you know, certain unions maybe aren't on the same page with the issues that we're struggling about, whether it's solidarity with Ferguson and the struggles of across the country. But we need to recognize ourselves as part of that labor movement and push and make the connections between graduate students, between carpenters, between the different folks. And so we're really happy to be on the Central Labor Council here in Champaign County and go to those meetings, do social events. events and connect folks. But we have a lot of work to do, I think, nationally as a labor movement. I've worked in the labor movement in Chicago, Vermont, Massachusetts, Ohio. I've worked with the United Electrical Workers. I've worked for a worker center in Cincinnati. At the same time that there's a lot of inspiring work going on around the country, we really need to highlight that and to put our resources where we need them. Because sooner or later, we might be facing issues like Michigan, like Wisconsin, where there's right to work and where resources might be harder. So I think we need to be smart, work smarter.
I don't think the pipeline companies are going to come in and help us out when it comes to a right to work issue, even though we might be able to make some ties with some environmental groups.
Right.
Your president, Gus Wood, he's a member of the Central Labor Council.
Yes, yeah. So he's actually a trustee. A trustee. So we have, GEO has a few delegates now. Myself, Grant, and Gus was a delegate, and he was actually voted at one of the last Central Labor Councils to be a trustee.
You probably have one of the larger delegations there. That's on a per capita basis.
Yes, it is on per cap. So we are looking to engage some of our other members in that process. It's a good space to connect with other members of the labor movement.
I haven't been to one of those meetings for really maybe 20 years.
Yeah.
Me and Peter used to kind of go to those things. Dave was involved too.
Yeah.
The Green Party incident.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So we had a person request if we would open up the phone line, so we'll go ahead and do that now too. So if you wanted to call in with a question for our guests, area code 217-359-5483, and we'll get you on the air. And if you got a question for our guests or if a comment just about anything in general these days, in the meantime, we'll continue our conversation here with our guests from the GEO. And Bill's looking for a track from a Charlie King CD over there.
Well, I was thinking maybe we could put something on and give people a little chance maybe to get to the phone if they wanted to. Don't have to play the whole song. There's something on this CD what looks good, Our Life is More Than Our Work, which is something that we're kind of talking about here. Our unions need to address more than just our work.
Right.
You know?
All right. What track number was that, Bill?
You know, got to get back to the roses as well as the bread. I don't know what track number that is. You'll have to look at the actual CD, I believe, instead of the jacket.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of more functions. Unions used to be centers of communities. You went down to the union hall to have your big dance or something.
I'm a big blues guy, you know, and the Coco Taylor song always says that, you know.
Oh, you said blues, not booze, right?
Yeah, well, a little bit of both, you know. They go hand in hand, I think.
You want some booze with your blues?
Yeah. But that's, you know, we're going to pitch a Wang Dane doodle or go down to the union hall and stuff. So, I mean, there's a long history of those being social gathering, meeting places
and stuff.
Well, they used to be,
one of the few in, you know, besides churches. And they used to provide more functions like churches do for their members. You know, we need to start looking at the church model. Those people have been really successful for a few thousand years, you know.
Yeah. Even laborers hall here locally used to seem to have more things happening out there. They used
to have
some
bands playing.
Well,
the thing that happens out there is wedding receptions.
Yeah.
They used to have a softball
diamond out there.
Yeah, there was tennis courts out there. I don't know why they put, you know, but that's all kind of gone away. I've seen some work happening there. I don't know maybe they just demoed all that out.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to a little bit of this Charlie King song here, and we'll be back in just a few minutes here on the World Labor Hour, WEFT in Champaign.
Our work is more how your life could go. If just for once you could get into letting go. Think how your life could be, feel how your life could go. If just for once you could let yourself go. Oh, our life is more than our work, and our work is more than our job. No, our life is more than our work, and our work is more than our job. Let go what holds you back, close your eyes, take a dive. We've got a universe we gotta keep alive. Let go what holds you back, close your eyes, take a dive. We've got a universe, fight and tell them. Oh, our life is more than our work, and our work is more than our job. You know our life is more than our work, and our work is more than our job. You know our life, yes, our life.
Like some classic labor-oriented folk music. I'm looking at these other CDs. My Hamney does have some titles that look a little bit more interesting, like Bye Bye, This American Car.
There you go. Charlie King we're talking about here. This says two great albums now on CD. Vaguely Reminiscent. That was what we heard a song from there, and that was Our Life is More Than Our Work. And there's another album on here, Vaguely Reminiscent, and Somebody's Story. So, once again, he's going to be playing December 11th, Thursday, room 319, Gregory Hall, at 3:30 p.m. And they're inviting everybody to come out and enjoy some good labor-related folk songs there, political activism.
Maybe so, he'll play Terror on Sesame Street, which is on the Puppet Town album.
Oh, there you go. Maybe.
And apparently Vaguely Reminiscent must be significant because that's the name. Vaguely Reminiscent Sounds is the record company here.
Oh. So we're back. We got two guests here from the GEO, and we were talking during the break a little bit about maybe some of the things that are going to come up with Bruce Rauner being elected governor of Illinois.
We'll be turning over police cars in front of the Capitol building.
You think so?
Oh, it could get there, man.
It could.
Bruce Rauner might be an opportunity.
Might be. You get people fired up. So the GEO was kind of looking into what some of the effects may be of Bruce Rauner getting elected, and what some of the actions or repercussions that the GEO might have planned.
Yeah, we've been thinking about that for a long time now, almost, I think, more than a year now. Yeah. And part of the work we did, the massive output we did for the Carrie Lammons campaign, was informed by our understanding of the kind of conservative moves that could, or neoconservative moves that Bruce Rauner could introduce in the state of Illinois. So I think that awareness that we put out in the community and in membership, and the kind of feedback we got from that, the sense I have is we've got a lot of people ready to fight the good fight. To really thinking about where right to work could affect us. Right. We've put in place several things here and there, the community organizer position, solidarity networks, and so on, which I think will be extremely handy. And I think the GEO would be very, very committed to standing completely opposed to the kind of policies that may be introduced in the state. Rauner was not the only bad news we had in the semester. Like I said before, Stephen Salaita's firing, the revelations of where campus money is invested in Israel, who's influencing decisions on this campus, the Board of Trustees. There was a string of bad news, you know, one after the other. But I think we've come out of it much stronger. We're not limping. We are very clear of where the targets are, what the issues are. And I think we've got a lot of more people enthused and excited around the U of I campus, especially graduate employees, who are ready to come out, who seem to be interested and want to work with new direction. And I think that process is something we're looking forward to.
Good.
I think one important point to make is the solidarity work and connecting to these very broad struggles is important. And what GEO is doing as well, especially speaking from the perspective of a union organizer, is matching that with strong union mobilization and organization. If you don't support your members and, you know, allow folks to realize the importance of a union, it's going to be hard to make those connections to realize why the solidarity is important. And so recently we've had struggles with attacks on tuition waivers. Mm-hmm. We have various departments coming together to create statements demanding transparency around funding issues, around how folks get assistantships. We have different issues going on with our members right now in terms of fighting for our contract that was hard fought and hard won and took mobilization and striking. Mm-hmm. And so it's important that we do that and match that with the solidarity. And so we can see, though, that solidarity can help that as well. And so through, for example, one of the biggest issues we've been dealing with in the with Masters of Computer Science students and a grievance there with attacks on tuition waivers, which largely affected international students in that department. You know, we went through the grievance process. We did everything we had to do. And there was just so much stalling on the part of the administration. It really took a rally, you know, on another cold day. It was actually one of the first snows of the semester, where people came together, and just a couple days later, the administration said, okay, we'll meet with you. Mm-hmm. So these things are not just about like ideologies and feel good politics. They're about concrete things to strengthen the union and strengthen the labor movement overall.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's a kind of a good way to close the conversation here. Anybody else have any closing comments?
Ideas? Well, he did. There was a video of him. I was looking for it, actually, saying that what he wanted to do if he got elected would be to fire all the state employees and start all over without the unions and stuff.
Oh, right. Bruce Warner, I believe we played that a month or so ago. Didn't we find it?
I did find something else called Plutocrat, the Ballad of Bruce Rauner. I don't have the computer hooked up to play it back, but if you search that on YouTube. Oh, okay. You got it there. Alrighty. Maybe close with this.
Yeah, we can see about doing that.
They got the lyrics printed. Okay. No nasty words that I can see.
Yeah. Okay. Otatai?
So I think it's precisely that crisis, the signs of which I think are visible with AFSCME's negotiations on campus, clerical and technical workers.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been facing a lot of, cold walls from the university during their bargaining sessions. And there has been very little response, favorable response from the university so far. And I think I would take this opportunity to let them know that the GEO stands behind them and that AFSCME is not alone.
Good.
And the kind of work we've been doing, I think we are ready to. And I just don't think we're afraid to bring the rain when we'll have to. So.
Yeah, yeah. You guys don't never seem to be afraid, you know.
No time
for that.
Yeah, there you go. It's good to have that youthful enthusiasm.
So. I like going on that trip a couple of years, two or three years ago.